Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is Friday, the business lunch on 720 WGN. As I said earlier, we're going to talk a little bit later with one of the guys behind Samaritan Ministries. It's fascinating to me, the idea that there are these sort of collectives, and these are based on religion, where they are contributing every month to sort of a healthcare fund, and they pull out of it as they need, not insurance. So that's a little bit later. We will also talk to Mark Hamrick from Bankrate.com about the jobless report, and they do a quarterly survey of economists and some interesting numbers out of that. Mark coming up. But we start on Fridays with Andrea Haynes. She is the editor behind Blue Sky Innovation. They cover tech and innovation in the Chicago Tribune. Andrea, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
Also editorial director for the Red Eye, and it's all about the Green River this weekend.
Red Eye's all about the Green River this weekend. We were just saying we can't quite see it from here, but soon enough.
Well, you know, because in this building, I spend most of my time in this building on the seventh floor, and they have little sort of balconies up there, and it's a wonderful view of the river. I took a picture a few years ago,
yeah,
which is about as close as I want to get, I think. But it's such a great atmosphere downtown, so I hope everyone has a great time.
And yeah, tons of fun.
Southside Parade on the same day, or the next day, I should say, same
yeah,
weekend.
Yeah, all in one weekend now.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Good luck with that, Chicago Police Department. We know you'll do well.
Yep.
All right. We talked on Monday with the Inno Boys about this KPMG survey, which showed Chicago up in the top 10. I love the survey. They said, other than San Francisco, right, or other than Silicon Valley, who do you expect to see the best growth, greatest growth when it comes to tech jobs? Chicago is in the top 10. Well, there's a study out today by the Brookings Institution, which is more good news.
It is. So, yes, Chicago again showed up in the top 10. Brookings did kind of a new analysis of some data and found that Chicago ranked ninth in demonstrating greatest increase in tech jobs in a period they studied between 2013 and 2015. And the city added about 10,000 tech jobs during that period.
Which is nice because it shows that the city was a little nimble, right? They grabbed onto something that was new. And we're nimble enough to take advantage of it.
I think so. And another interesting thing about this study is it looked at sort of the share of tech jobs that are in different cities. And it found that really they are heavily concentrated in that top 10. So they aren't necessarily spreading across the country in any kind of way that's, you know, bringing up maybe some areas that need to be brought up. But Chicago grabbed a little bit more. It tied for sixth on that, grabbing 0.2% more share of those jobs. So it's growing both in number and in the share that it's grabbing up throughout the country.
That's nice. Okay, so we'll continue to follow that because we've also talked about how that's kind of it's kind of like grabbing mercury, right? Figuring out how many tech jobs there are or are
not.
It
really is. And there's, you know, how do you define a tech job? It's just, it's hard to get your mind around that.
It's one of the areas where Chicago companies are going to recruit, sometimes to recruit, other times to show off, is the South by Southwest Festival, which starts this weekend.
Definitely.
And it used to be the city would try to make a little splash. They're not going to do it this year.
Yeah, the city has basically pulled out this year. In previous years, you know, when Blue Sky started, Rahm Emanuel went. The first year we covered it, I believe, which was 2014. You know, in previous years, they've just had a big presence. They've flown tons of people down. They've had various kinds of booths and displays and just trying to introduce Chicago and promote Chicago.
Which is the sort of thing that might pay off then in surveys like the Brookings Institution or
KPMG. It does
KPMG.
Raise awareness at least, right? I mean, yeah, if it leads to actual jobs, then yes. It also just, you know, I think you want to just be there because, you know, someone's looking for where to headquarter company or
right.
Someone's, you know, it's just a place to be. But they apparently decided their efforts were better spent here in Chicago.
And they said they're going to do events in Chicago, but then they didn't really have an answer for what
those
events were.
Yeah, they didn't have a super clear answer on that yet.
So we'll see where that is. Our own Michael Heidemann, former producer of the Business Lunch, is going down there for WGN Radio, and he'll join us, I hope, next week. He was with us last year. And he would meet different sort of tech companies. There are Chicago tech companies down there, right, trying to create some noise?
There are. We have a reporter down there, too. Meg Graham is down there, and you can follow her at Megan C. Graham on Twitter. So she's already tweeting from Cory Booker's talk this morning, so that's kind of cool. But she's also talking to companies like K-Cura, which is a Chicago company. They're looking to add 200 jobs in the near future, and so recruiting is part of what they're doing down there, just trying to get in front of these digitally-minded people that attend the festival.
And I know Buzz Aldrin's going to speak there, because when you think young in tech, you think Buzz Aldrin. And James
is cool.
James Comey was supposed to speak there about internet security and canceled at the last minute.
I can't imagine why. Can you?
No, I can't. Did I ask you, though, are there specific companies? Because I wanted to, one I was looking at was this Haas Alert. What is that about?
Yeah, so that's an ambulance alert thing for your vehicle. We may have talked about that before. We've covered them a little bit. They won a smaller contest in Detroit. They got a little bit of attention. So they're kind of looking to get some more attention down there, too. Public Good is another company we may have occasionally talked
that
about.
Familiar.
They're more good cause focused, so they're down there. And they're, you know, speaking on panels, doing that kind of thing.
So is this like the Sundance of the tech world?
I would say that's
world?
A very good way of putting it. You know, just for be it thought leadership, for recruiting, for just being there. And it's one of those things that every year people say South By doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
And then they're all tweeting from South By, you know. So some may have dropped out a little bit, but I think it still is that place where people gather and look for talent.
Right. So there are people who go down there for very legitimate reasons to try to meet people, to try to connect, to try to bring people back. And then there are people who go down there who say that, and they just have a party for 4 days.
Tacos, you know, are the thing to do, really,
right?
And then, of course, it then morphs into the music festival as the week wears on. So if you're able to be down there for both, I guess you get the best of both worlds.
You could get sucked into Austin and never leave, which wouldn't be an all bad thing.
Yep.
Mike Pruitt, the new administrator at EPA, has been kind of in hot water lately because he talked about how he doesn't think that humans are necessarily so responsible for global warming, for the increase of the gases. There's talk that the Trump administration is going to cut EPA by maybe 25% or so. So I know that you guys at Blue Sky looked at that and looked at some clean energy companies in the area, and they must be a little apprehensive about all this, but you kind of find out that they're not.
Yeah, they're either putting a good face on it or they truly are a little bit zen. And I think the main reason they're a little bit zen is, you know, almost maybe ironically, is they're like, well, we're not going to be a blockbuster in the next 4 years anyway. So we're not all that worried about the next 4 years. These companies take a super long time to develop. So while I think it's unquestionable that if there are no regulations, then your regulation-beating startup might not make it,
right?
Or your alternative energy might, you know, suffer. It seems clear they're not super panicked about the near term because they're very long-term types of companies.
And what kind of companies are we talking about here?
There's clean energy of all kinds. You know, there's things that provide alternative energy that the Clean Energy Trust invests in, and you know, things like wind and solar.
Intelligent Generation? Because I keep hearing about them. No. I thought that was the company that they were their store and working with a lot of schools and things like that.
Yeah, maybe.
So it's interesting, though, because you think that they would be kind of panicked, but they're thinking, well, they kind of are saying, well, Donald Trump's not going to win in 4 years.
Exactly.
We'll just wait him out.
Yeah. So they're like an energy storage software platform. So I'd say they're a step removed from actually doing the thing.
And
but
a lot
they're
of
providing
them,
a platform.
And they don't really get
business.
Government money anyway, right?
Almost never. I mean, there are some government grants and things like that, but they're not heavily reliant on the government for cash. And one of our sources said, if you are heavily reliant on the government for cash, you're not going to make it anyway.
Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, Chicago Tribune. All right, have a great weekend.
You too, Steve. Thanks.
And we'll see. Don't jump in that Green River, okay?
I won't.
It's 12:22. This is the Subdued Business Lunch on 720 WGN as we head into a weekend on Friday. Okay, so, you know, Adam Ockstein, he comes in from time to time, the CEO of StratX. He's beside himself because Northwestern's playing Maryland later today in the Big Ten tournament. And he's a big Maryland fan. He doesn't know what to do. So in his place is the head of HR at StratX, Gretchen Van Vlieman, who in her bio, Adam calls a rock star. So no pressure, Gretchen. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks. Good to be here.
We're talking. I always talk to Adam a little bit about basketball. So you are Indiana,
correct?
And also, we have in the room Wisconsin. So we got a little battle there, Northwestern,
yes.
Maryland. It's a great time of year.
Yeah, it's exciting.
But there are games being played in Washington as well,
correct?
And I just don't know who to believe right now. I was listening to Tom Price, the Health and Human Services Secretary, talk about healthcare on the way in, and it just sounds like everyone's going to be covered. And, you know, he almost was saying the same thing that got Barack Obama in trouble, that you're going to be able to keep your plan and have better plans and things like that. And right now, we don't really know what's going to come from healthcare.
Correct. I think it depends on who you ask right now, because there are a lot of different opinions.
And so as a HR professional, how do you deal with that in the workplace?
You know, we just try to prepare for the unexpected by making sure everybody has a lot of information. So we're telling our employers, hey, the ACA is still in place. Make sure that you're doing business as usual, complying with what you've got. But here's some more information about what could lay ahead.
And so, I mean, the ACA is in place and it's going to be in place right through 2017.
Correct.
Or further.
Well, I think that there will be a phased approach. Whatever happens, there will be a phased in or phased out approach over the next couple of years.
Have you been hearing from your companies? Are they concerned?
Yes, I think they are concerned. Anytime you have uncertainty with a big law that's going to affect your employees, they're very concerned. But we'll see how it goes. I think that they're excited by the prospect of maybe doing away with the mandates, mm-hmm. which are a big part of the new AHCA, because that then rids them of the responsibility of offering coverage to their full-time employees or paying a big tax penalty.
So tell me about that. So a lot of these companies then, if they don't have the individual mandate, might not feel required to offer health insurance.
Sure. Yeah. So the individual mandate is saying so employees or individuals themselves aren't going to have to pay a tax penalty if they don't have coverage.
Right. Companies wouldn't have to pay a penalty if they don't offer.
And that's the employer mandate.
Right,
so yeah,
right.
They're getting out of that effectively in this new law. And so a lot of employers are happy about that, but it kind of freaks employees out, you know?
Right. Okay. So that tells me that's contrary or could be contrary to what Tom Price is saying, because mm-hmm. fewer and fewer businesses that offer insurance now might be next year.
Right. And what they're hoping, I think the idea is that premiums will go down, so more employers will want to offer coverage and use it more as a recruitment tool than anything.
I see. So, yeah, we have insurance even though we don't have to give it to you.
Yes, exactly.
But you can also see why, is if you're running a business and you're trying to cut costs and turn
exactly.
a profit, that's attractive to you.
Exactly. And also the overhead of dealing with the reporting for the ACA, which was very, very complex. If that would go away, that might also free up some funds and some time.
On the other side of the equation, then, if you are an employee, mm-hmm. It's an uncertain time.
It is, and you're really going to look for an employer who offers coverage, and that would be a big draw for you as an employee.
Is it a dangerous time for HR professionals?
It's always dangerous for HR professionals.
I sort of wonder about that, because there might be a little less demand for, I don't know, there'll always will be demand, but maybe a little less work for them. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's a good time.
Maybe. I do think with the Trump administration, we're always going to be busy, frankly.
Right.
But yeah, when it comes to the administration of this new law, it might be a little easier from a reporting standpoint.
Okay. So let's go back to where we started then. You've got the companies who you work with calling you saying, mm-hmm. what do we do?
Yes.
And it sounds to me like you're telling them to be prepared, but really they just have to wait.
Yeah. It's just kind of wait and see right now. But make sure that you're talking to your employees and communicating with them so that there's no panic. We want to keep their employees as calm as possible.
That's probably what they can do. They can just
yes.
keep the communication open and know
yeah.
that once, because if you start reacting to what you're hearing now, that's crazy talk, because what you're hearing now almost certainly isn't going to be what we end up with.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's just
going to change. Right.
Right.
Okay. So like we always say at this segment, have a nice line of communication with your employees.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Gretchen Vlein-Vlyman, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Did a human race at Stratix. Did I say that right? Vlein-Vlyman,
you
right?
did. You
How
got
about
it.
About that? All right. Go.
Hoosiers.
Well, I got to go with Wisconsin. Sorry about that. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WG and a sunny Friday as we head into March and all the St. Patrick's Day celebrations in Chicago on the weekend. And why not celebrate? The jobs report out for February, and it was nice. 235,000 jobs created. The unemployment rate down to 4.7%. I think we're at where a lot of economists would say full employment. To help us understand it all, Mark Hamrick is on a phone line, the Washington Bureau Chief and Chief Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. He's on with us from time to time. Mark, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Good to be with you, Steve.
All right, so these numbers were, well, what? They were better than people were expecting, right?
I think we had to reset expectations after a very positive report from ADP earlier in the week that had nearly 300,000 jobs added. So earlier this morning, I was saying I would have been shocked if we didn't get 200,000 or more jobs added. But to your point, this was above the trend of the previous 6 months, and I think it's roundly a good report.
I hear the phrase full employment. Are we at full employment?
No. Quick answer. We're at the level that people typically associate with full employment, but I still believe there's quite a bit of slack left in the workforce, meaning there are plenty of people who can be helped by either better jobs or being employed. And as measures of that, we still have millions of people who are working part-time who would like to have full-time work, and we still have a fair number of people who are unemployed as well. The key question is how many of those people are really eligible for the jobs available, and I think it's also the best guess of many people who watch this closely is that we probably have millions of jobs that go unfilled because either there is not a sufficient number of qualified people for those jobs, or they're in the wrong place, let's say, in terms of geography.
But the participation rate was up this month, I think the highest since last March. What does that mean? I guess the point is that we've still been pretty historically low when it comes to that rate.
Well, that's right, and that probably isn't going to change substantially because of we baby boomers, in other words, referring to myself. So,
You're putting your feet up and retiring, that's what you're saying.
Well, I'm not, but many people are, and especially those who are older than I am, and that's not going to change. But we did have more than 300,000 people come into the workforce, and yet we still had the unemployment rate go down by 0.1%. Steve, I can remember many months in the past where we had the labor force participation rate rise, and that contributed to a jump in the unemployment rate.
Right.
So it's nice to see these moving in these directions.
I want to ask you about something else, because one of the things, you know, I'm not a business or economic expert by any means. I learn my topics every day before we talk. And here's something that I didn't realize there were statistics for. It's the number of people who were kept out of work each month by the weather. I bring it up because February was nice when it comes to weather, and it was easier to work. So reading here, 157,000 people were unable to work in February because of inclement weather. That's down from an average of 311,000. So the implication is that the mild February led to more jobs created?
I think so, and absolutely, because you see the strength in the goods-producing sector, particularly construction, both in January and February. And let's talk about that just for a second. In the Labor Department way of looking at things, the good-producing sector is defined by construction, manufacturing, and mining. Mining includes oil drilling. And we had nearly 100,000 jobs added in goods-producing, so that alone can account for a lot of the upside here.
So it's not necessarily that there were new jobs created, it's just that these people who might have been hired in April could be hired in February?
It remains to be seen whether we're bringing those hires forward. I think you probably had a number of positive things happening. People are asking, is this the Trump bump, the weather, or
right,
some combination? And I say it is some combination. And we'll need to see strong demand going forward. We're also seeing an improving economy across Europe, and that helps too.
I know that you do a survey every quarter, the bankrate.com survey of economists, and that was done, where are we now? Well, about, 2 weeks ago. You talk to these economists. Let's talk about this Trump bump. I mean, how much credit does he deserve for this?
Well, that's not a question we asked directly in this survey, but here's one thing that I'd like to point to, and that is one of the things that, of course, the president came to office on was sort of the vilifying of global trade agreements, right? And I think we can all agree that there has been some negative impacts of all that. I don't think there's any disagreement about that. But what I wanted to know was, what is the greater threat in the future, automation or globalization? And Steve, the answer of 71% of the economists was that the greater threat in the future is automation. 14% said globalization, 14% said about the same. But overall, the economists said the outlook for the economy is fairly upbeat. They expect that the GDP will average about 2.5% over the next year. And, so that's consistent with an economy that's continuing to grow at a pretty good clip.
I started to laugh a little bit when you talked about the administration in statistics, because these unemployment numbers were the ones that candidate Trump was very critical of while he was running. Now that he's in office and things look pretty good, I think they probably like these numbers.
It's not the first time that either
no,
this president or another has seemed to find a reason to shift, but perhaps it's more dramatic this time around.
And the 76% who, or what did you say, it was 71%?
71,
more. That's almost in keeping with the percentage of jobs that are lost by, right? I'm trying to think that when it talks about the number of manufacturing jobs lost, I think I've read somewhere that it's like 87% are to automation, 13% to globalization. Am I remembering that correctly?
I haven't seen those exact numbers, but I wouldn't quibble. And, so you might say, well, even if we could recapture some of those jobs lost in either category, that would be a good thing. But the problem is, other than Bill Gates suggesting that you tax robots, the question is, how do you counter those trends, or how do you manage in the face of them?
Right, so you looked at the economists, you asked them what they expect for the year to come, and 235 jobs this month, they don't expect that to be the average over the year.
No, but, you know, I do think that they're probably keeping their pencils at the ready because, you know, on average, they look for about 170,000 jobs added each month over the next 12. And they frankly base that on what they'd seen in the recent past. So I think if we started seeing the economy operating at a higher level of output, you know, if we see GDP consistently at 2.5% and above, which is something we haven't seen in like forever, then I think those forecasts would be coming up.
I didn't ask you about wage growth, up 2.5% over a year ago, which is nice. That was sort of one of those numbers that's been lacking, and that probably will be watched closely by Janet Yellen and the Fed when they meet next week.
Absolutely. The average hourly earnings in this report were up 2.8%, which was better than the 2.5% in January. That's one contributor to the inflation numbers. And obviously, you know, the lack of wage growth is almost a single source of complaint in the course of this economic recovery and is subpar for economic recoveries, as you know. So I think one of the things we'll be watching, and I plan to be in the room next Wednesday afternoon when the Fed holds the news conference, when Janet Yellen speaks. And I think one of the things we'll see on paper or virtual paper is the summary of economic projections, including the forecast for employment and the federal funds rate over the coming several years. And it'll be interesting to see if they lift that path of benchmark rates. In other words, will they think that they might have to be raising rates more than what they previously thought?
That's Mark Hamrick, the Washington Bureau Chief at Bankrate.com. All right, Mark, great to talk to you again. I appreciate it. You always help us with understanding all these numbers.
It's my great pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much.
Talk again soon. It's 12:51. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, there's a concert in town tonight, and that has me thinking of health insurance, Christian health, and that doesn't make any sense. I want to talk to Anthony Hopp, who is on a phone line now with us, and he is a spokesman for Samaritan Ministries. Anthony, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Good afternoon, Steve. Great to be with you.
And the pride of Eastern Illinois University, I think I should add, since we're in tournament time. I don't know if they're going to make the tournament this year, though.
Yeah, probably not. If they do, it'll probably be a quick exit.
VP at Samaritan Ministries, and this, I think I've talked to you guys before because it comes up from time to time, and we're talking about health reform now and insurance and all of that. It's just kind of fitting to, it seems to me like a health sharing or responsibility sharing sort of co-op. I don't know. Explain for me Samaritan Ministries.
Sure. Crowdfunding for healthcare is probably the easiest way to think of it. It's people of faith coming together to share one another's medical expenses directly, person to person, household to household, without using any insurance. And while healthcare sharing ministries are a relatively new entity, 2 or 3 decades, the concept itself has its origins in the early Christian church of people taking care of one another. And so Samaritan right now has just under 69,000 households, and that translates to about 225,000 individuals. And we all together share a little over $23 million every single month.
So the group is spending $23 million paying for $23 million of healthcare bills every month.
Right, and the unique feature here is that those monies don't come to Samaritan. They're not pooled together. Rather, we facilitate the sharing of those funds. So as a Samaritan member, I am sending a check to a different person every month. But the beauty of it is I know exactly how my money is being stewarded. And additionally, we're able to pray for one another and send cards and notes of encouragement. So community is really the focus
okay.
of what's going on.
So how does that work? So let's say I'm part of the group and I'm sick. I've got a broken bone, a broken arm. And I go to Samaritan Ministries and I say, I need $12,000 for my broken arm. You put the word out to your shareholders, or how is it that, and then they write me checks directly?
You got it. That's exactly right. First of all, you go to the doctor of your choosing. So Samaritan members are directing their own health care, which is a great benefit. And then after the bills are received by the member, they simply send them to Samaritan Ministries, and then we direct enough members to send their shares to the person with the need. So it's not a haphazard approach where we pass the hat and, you know, we're crossing our fingers right. hoping everybody gets enough. If somebody needs $200,000, then that is what gets assigned to the members.
So if you're a member, you're committed to spending, I think, what, for a family it's $495 a month, right? Is that it?
That's correct.
Okay, so you're committed to spending that $495. Samaritan would say, this person can use that $495, so send the check directly to Steve for his broken arm.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's right. And then you take those funds that you receive, and then you would pay the providers directly. And doctors, incidentally, are loving this sort of approach because they don't have the costs associated with
right.
managed care.
They're not dealing with the insurance paperwork and all that, I would imagine. Okay.
That's right.
Anthony, I tend to see the glasses half empty, maybe sometimes three quarters empty. What happens if I have a lot more than a broken arm? And my medical bills run into the millions. Have you run into that with any individual?
We sure have. Dozens, actually, over the 22 years where medical needs have been well into the millions. And by God's grace, every single penny has been shared. If there's any bright spot in such a large medical need, it's that typically the larger the medical expense, the larger the discount. And so that helps keep costs down. But also just the faithfulness of members sending does it as well. So, you know, we're sharing medical needs starting at $300. So it's just not the major catastrophic stuff. It could be something as simple as broken bone or stitches. But then we're, of course, seeing those really large medical needs as well.
So the rest of the world has its hair on fire about Obamacare or Trump Care or Ryan Care. You know, my first reaction was going to be that that's really none of your concern. But I suppose it is as well, because your members are still paying taxes and supporting that in one way or another.
Sure. And we watch that very closely. Our public policy team has been very busy over the last years, and we're still busy, of course, now with the American Health Care Act. And everybody's watching to see what's going on. And it probably will be a while until we have some definitive answers. But you're exactly right, Steve. I mean, this was going on long before the Affordable Care Act, and we, by God's grace, had an exemption in the Affordable Care Act, so we still were operating, and Lord willing, we will be afterwards. So this really is just the fusing together of innovation, free markets, personal responsibility, and charity, and it's one of the bright spots, I think, in our healthcare mess.
Anthony Hopp is a vice president at Samaritan Ministries. Okay, I started by talking about a concert. We got about 30 seconds left. Explain for me why a concert is involved in this.
Winter Jam is a time for people of faith to get together and experience community. Samaritan Ministries is a national sponsor. Samaritan is about community, too, of course. And so through our partnership, we're able to help Winter Jam put on this tremendous event that starts tonight at 7 o'clock at the Allstate Arena. Doors open at 6. And also, Samaritan has the opportunity to introduce healthcare sharing to a lot of people who may have not heard of it.
Anthony Hopp, it's great to talk to you. Have we talked before? Do you remember?
I don't think we have.
No, I wonder.
I've listened a ton. Yeah. I've listened a ton in the past because I'm originally from Aurora, so
yeah.
Before I moved to Peoria, I was listening, but we have not spoken.
Your organization fascinates me, and so I know that we will talk in the future. Thanks very much, and good luck tonight. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Steve. Thank you.